Welcome to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
You betcha.
Amen.
You betcha. Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzink's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander, and across from me is Bunker de France.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, and way to the west of us is our good friend Todd Robertson, Los Angeles area. Howdy.
Gentlemen, it is a pleasure to be with you today. And I'm grateful to be in your presence, if only audio. Yeah.
The man knows words,
doesn't
he? He's
over there with his big toe in the Pacific Ocean. Yeah.
Well, that's a cold ocean. The Atlantic is much warmer.
Yes, very true.
Yeah, I swam in the Pacific once, and it was...
You got it on a bad day.
No, I don't believe so.
Gulf Stream.
Yeah, the Atlantic is much warmer by far. Anyway, we got us a good show coming up today. Sam K. Dolan, almost said Dalton.
Sam Dalton, yeah.
Is
him and his brothers.
Is our guest. He's an author, film producer, documentary filmmaker, and jack of all trades. And so we'll be talking with him. But first, we have Bunker's Bovine.
Well, okay. Well, before I get to Bunker's Bunkhouse delivery here, I just want to mention to the folks here in Tucson, if you're not doing anything later on this evening after the show, at 7 p.m. out at Old Tucson, the Sons of the Pioneers will be warbling their little hearts out for you.
Whatever iteration of the Sons it is, I'm sure it's going to be good.
I saw a picture. All of them look like they're in their 40s.
So.
Strange. Okay, now what I'm going to do to you, and I'm going to do it to you, is I'm going to bring to you the latest edition of The Good, The Bad, and The Bovine. How that works, and this is for Sam so he understands what's going on. I travel back 3 days in time from today, but not necessarily in any kind of cohesive order, and 3 days into the future with definitely no conducive order.
Because that's how he is.
That's the way time is. It's relativity. Okay, I'm going to start out with January 21st, 1921. That's a 21-21. And this guy is a particular favorite of mine. In fact, all of us, I'm sure. John Doucette was born.
He's
a prolific Western performer, playing tough guys, and noted for being a quick draw artist.
He was.
Yes, he was.
I don't know if he was faster than Sel Reed, but...
Well,
or Glenn Ford, but he was pretty fast.
He gave the Lone Ranger.
Don't forget Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, yeah, and Sammy Davis Jr. was pretty...
There's a bunch of those guys. Ford, Glenn Ford. Now, the 22nd of January, but this is in 1875, David Wark, or better known as D.W. Griffin, was born as a director, considered one of the most important persons in motion picture history. He was a pioneer. A personal favorite of mine is A Birth of the Nation, 1950. Now, for those of you that don't like that, that's your tough. Now, January 23rd, 18...
You tell him, Bunker.
You tell him. I love that kind of stuff. And in the 23rd, in 1898, Randolph Scott. Randolph Scott was born.
We all put our hands over our hearts.
Yes, we did. He appeared. Now he appeared in more than 60 odors. Bob Steele in 1907 was born on that same day.
Alrighty,
Bobby Steele, battling Bobby Steele.
You betcha.
On the 24th, which is today, but only in 1917. Ernie Borgnine was born.
Wow.
A legend. There's a quote from him, and this is a quote on Brokeback Mountain. Now, don't get your hackles up. He said, "If John Wayne were alive, he'd be rolling over in his grave."
Yeah.
I love Ernie. On the 24th, I got two 24ths here?
Hey.
Well, that's weird.
Double vision.
Maybe that's the 25th. Okay, we'll give you double your money here. On the 1733, Benjamin Lincoln, no relation to the other guy, an American military officer in the American Revolution at the Battle of Saratoga, Charleston, and Yorktown. He was a major general, later served as lieutenant governor of Massachusetts. Saratoga, he was a winner. Charleston, he surrendered, and Yorktown, we all know what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the 25th in 1995, a guy I always enjoyed his work, John Smith, passed away. He's considered by some the ideal cowboy, especially the girls. He was a prominent Western roles were Slim at Sherman and Laramie. He did 122 episodes. Deputy Sheriff Wayne Temple in Cimarron City, 26 episodes. That was an interesting series. Unfortunately, George Montgomery didn't like it, so he quit doing it. Steve McCabe in Circus World, and John Wayne was a personal mentor of his, so that's an attaboy for him.
Yeah.
Now, on the 26th, 1939, Scott Glenn came into the world. He's a fine actor. He's noted for Urban Cowboy, Cattle Annie and Little Britches, Silverado, My Heroes Have Always Been Cowboys, and Secretariat. Now we'll finish off this odyssey of ours with January 27, 1994. Claude Akins passed away. He's one of my all-time, this mm-hmm. guy was just, he should have been big. Well, he was big, but he wasn't a big star. He passed. He appeared in nearly 100 films, over 180 TV episodes, and more important than anything else, he was Bob Wilkie's golfing partner. And that's it from the Bovine.
All righty then. Let's welcome our guest.
Wait a minute, you've got an announcement.
Oh, yes, I do. We want to say congratulations to our friend and advertiser. That would be Russell True of the White Stallion Ranch. True,
which we were always there last Saturday.
That's right. True West Magazine named him Westerner of the Year for everything that he has done regarding the Dude Ranch industry. And
he's a giant.
He is. He's headed that organization. I don't know if he still does, but
he still does. He's got five Dude Ranches that he's running. White Stallion, also down on the border, Tombstone. And then he's got the oldest, the very first, if not the first, two ranches up in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that, but that's kind of a specialty vendor, and I can't remember what
the name is. Yeah, I don't recall the name. But anyway, congratulations, Russell. You definitely deserve it.
And we'll grab some adorbs when we're out there next Saturday.
Yes, and we are out there every Saturday for our Movie Saturday program. And if you're local and have a mind to, you can come and join us as well, be part of our studio audience.
The Peanut Gallery.
Yeah, and you can throw peanuts at us. Well, not really. Anyway,
That's what you pay me.
Yeah, right. Let's welcome our guest, Sam Dolan. Sam, welcome to Voices of the West.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I've been enjoying listening so far.
I'm glad you're
taking note
it.
Of all of these events and people in January.
Yeah, there'll be
Scott
a test.
Glenn and Random Scott.
Yeah, there'll be a test later.
I took notes.
Yeah.
Just on that note, Sam, let's take things in the totally wrong direction. You have I'm not positive, but I have a pretty far, deep certainty that you might be a very unusual guest on Voices of the West, because as I can see here through my research, you might be the first guest to have this many friends that are common to me, and several of them have been guests on the show.
Yeah.
Eric Heiser, Jerry Tarantino, I used to shoot with. Stuart Rosebrook, I did way too many meals with. Michael F. Blake, a friend of the show. Peter Sirico, I've tried to steal many items from him, never accomplished anything. Henry Park, we love Henry, we had him on. Larry Zoig, I used to meet at the Horseless Carriage a coffee shop at Galpin Ford. Greg Worley, Bill Mills Jr., Johnny Boggs, a friend of the show, used to be
long-time friend.
Guest panelist on the show. Bill Spangenberger, our good, deep, deep felt friend that we lost. Buck Taylor, who I have art of in this house. Jim Myers, Marshall Holloway, and, of course, Bob Eakin. This is a strange thing. I mean, are the stars in alignment here? Tell us the truth, man.
They must be. Well, several of those people are very dear and old friends. Obviously, I worked on Tombstone with Peter and Larry and Jerry, you know, almost 33 years ago. I was very young then.
Yeah.
And
you were a big,
but it was a really important experience in my young life. And of course, we did a lot of other things together as well. I learned a lot about firearms working with Larry when I was young. And Peter and I have known each other, oh gosh, a long, long time. I'm friends and acquaintances with many of the other people that you mentioned. Stuart is a great friend, and I think he's
why you're
he's
on
just
the
got
show.
The best job around up there at Charlotte Hall Museum.
Ooh,
now.
Yes.
And, yeah,
sure does.
It's a really,
yeah.
You've got me in August company, so thank you.
Yeah, and also I just want to mention again John Bosenecker, who you I believe consider one of your mentors.
Yeah, we had him on the show.
Oh, I most certainly do. Yeah, now, John is a great friend, a very patient friend. He's answered a lot of questions for me and helped me along over the years, and we've been friends for a long time. And he and his wife Marta are both such nice people, and John is most definitely a mentor of mine.
So you obviously got to know Thal Reed pretty well working on Tombstone.
I did, and I was thinking about this when you mentioned Thal a few moments ago. I remember watching Thal shoot
you know,
back then, and boy, was he scary fast.
You could see it?
Yeah, he could get like a Colt single action.
Yeah,
scary and good. I mean, he could get a Colt single action out and fire two shots and make it sound like one.
Yeah.
I saw him go through an obstacle course with guys who were carrying 1911 and 6-hour automatics, and he was faster than they were with his single action.
Oh, yeah.
And these guys were either current military, former military, current law enforcement, former law enforcement. And he lived here in my house for 2 years when he was making Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Down in the Valley. So that leads us to the fact that, do you remember John Jockinson and the great Jake Johnson?
Oh, yes, I remember them both. I haven't seen John in quite a few years, but I remember them both. And I've stayed in touch with Jake. And when I was still living in Los Angeles, I would run into him, you know, periodically. And great guys.
Let's get started talking about your books.
Ooh,
there are three on tap here. Hell Paso, The Line Riders. That's a story about the Border Patrol in its early years. And Cowboys and Gangsters, stories of the untamed Southwest. Let's start with Hell Paso. Why did you pick on Hell Paso for your first book there?
You know, I was always fascinated with El Paso, Texas. You know, I got into the history of the Old West, and particularly the history of crime and law enforcement in the Old West very early on, and I was always fascinated by the sort of final months of John Wesley Hardin's life,
which
you know, played out there in El Paso. And over the years, you know, you become aware of how many people went to that town, and you start to wonder, well, what drew them there, and why was El Paso such a wild and violent place? And I thought it would be a good idea for a book.
Plus, Marty Robbins wrote a song about it.
Wrote a song about it, exactly, a couple of songs
about
it. And it's like a sequel song to that.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was a fascinating place. El Paso is one of the most historic cities in the nation, certainly in this part of the country, the Southwest. It's an important place culturally and historically. But as far as crime is concerned, it's also a very fascinating study. Yeah.
Still today.
When people ask me, what do you write about? The short answer is I usually say, if somebody says, hey, I hear you're a writer, and what do you write about? I'll say I write about crime. If I say I write about the Old West, you know, I don't know what that might conjure up and what that might mean to different people, but I write about crime in the Old West, and there's certainly a lot of material in El Paso.
Outside of John Wesley Hardin, who is, in fact, still buried there, the town where he was born, the folks there, they were trying to get him exhumed and brought back to that little Texas town, and I think the El Paso City Council said, pound sand. He's staying here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he's still there. So outside of Hardin, who else was infamous, shall we say, in El Paso?
The guys.
Oh, God, there were so many different outlaws and lawmen that came through El Paso and spent time there or were killed there. One of the first that comes to mind is Dallas Studenmeyer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dallas Studenmeyer showed up in early 1881. He had been in a number of gunfights and on both sides of the law, and he became the city marshal in the spring of 1881. And I think he'd had the job for maybe 3 or 4 days, something like that. And he engaged in this incredible shootout. It all happened in just the blink of an eye. Four people were killed in just a few seconds, and wow. Studenmeyer killed three of them himself. And was in a couple of other gunfights within a very short time frame. And then the following year, he was killed in El Paso. John Selman, of course, a very fascinating, interesting, enigmatic sort of figure. He'd been an outlaw in Texas and in New Mexico. He reinvented himself in a way in El Paso, Texas, got himself elected as the constable of Precinct 1. And, of course, he killed John Wesley Hardin in 1895, but he was involved in a whole lot of other things, too. Manon Clements, who was one of Wes Hardin's cousins. Clements was a constable also there in El Paso and had a very storied career as a lawman and died very mysteriously. The list goes on and on. I mean, so many people passed through that place. You know what? El Paso was the intersection of five major railroads, and it was a shipping point for cattle, and it was a shipping point for ore from northern Mexico and the southwest. And so there was a lot of commerce there. It had a lot of saloons and bordellos and all of the things that attract interesting and colorful and dangerous people.
Did you get into the salt wars at all?
I did a little bit. Yeah, I sort of opened the book with the salt war. A lot of what happened with Studenmeyer when he was city marshal, the salt war was sort of a prelude, was sort of a backdrop to that. You know, you had a lot of tension in El Paso County at the time. It was sort of a turning point. You know,
The Texas Rangers didn't do too good there.
No, they did not. No, Taze obviously very infamously surrendered, which of course is a big controversy in the history of the Rangers. Some of the quality of the people who were Rangers at the time was a bit dubious and questionable. That was a pretty wild and violent chapter in the history of the borderlands, for sure.
Okay, we need to do our very first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Our guest, Sam Dolan, he's an author, documentary filmmaker, and boy, does he have a voice. You ought to be in radio.
He should be on the show. Yeah, he is on the show.
You ought to be in radio, man. Anyway.
I got a face for it.
There you go. Harry Alexander, Bunker DeFrance, and Todd Roberts with you on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. We'll be back with much more after these messages. Stay tuned.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms. But you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Now look, you fellas come riding here making accusations. You're strangers to me. I don't see why I should take your word against Sharky's. Yeah, how do we know they didn't pull the murder and robbery themselves? So that's it. That's why you're so darn cocky. You think because you're three against one that you're...
You can't get away with that, Glasgow. We don't bluff that easy.
This is the Voices of the West.
Come on and ride, ride, ride over the mountain. When the sun comes around tomorrow to light up the great divide, we're gonna reel and roll till we reach our goal. So let's hop aboard our ponies and we'll ride, ride, ride.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles, and our guest Sam Dolan, author and filmmaker, and some Jimmy Wakely there suggesting that we ride, ride, and ride.
That's right.
A good idea, I reckon. Let's see. Anything further that you want to talk about, Sam, regarding El Paso?
Only to say that, you know, it's a fascinating place, like I said, with a lot of history beyond, obviously, the things that I wrote about in El Paso. But as far as dangerous places or lawless towns in the Old West, it's really hard to top El Paso, Texas.
Well, are you familiar with one of his nicknames, Cowtown?
I'm sorry, will you repeat that question? I apologize.
Yeah, it fell asleep on me, huh? No, are you familiar with one of its nicknames? It was called Cowtown. The reason being that it was kind of the roping center in the early 1900s, roping center for all the rodeo guys. They would winter there, and it was pretty raucous.
Yeah, it was, and I had read that. You know, that was after the so-called six-shooter capital days, but mm-hmm. Yeah, it continued to be a very raucous place. I mean, it was, and I've written about it in later periods as well. My other books cover El Paso in the 1910s and 1920s and 30s, mm-hmm. And because of its climate, it attracted a lot of different people and a lot of events, and it became a very wild place during Prohibition, too.
What about Fort Bliss?
Oh, that's been there a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been there a long time. It's moved. It, you know, I think in Fort Bliss's history, there's technically three different forts.
Yes.
It's sort of moved around a bit.
Most of us in New Mexico.
Yeah. But it was a very important. That was a very important aspect of the town's history. You know, Fort Bliss was a very important army post on the border. A lot of soldiers in town. And sometimes that was a recipe for conflict as well.
When isn't it?
And the Mexican
Wars. Usually, yeah.
Yeah, well, in these days now, I haven't been to El Paso in a couple of years now. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law live there, and we go visit every now and then and take in a baseball game. And by God, they've got a good AAA baseball club there, farm club for the San Diego Padres.
Oh,
so I'm not a Padre fan, but I do like the Chihuahuas.
Chihuahuas.
Oh, yeah. Yip, 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 yip. And I like El Paso. I've spent a lot of time there, and there's a lot of history there, and a lot of great people, and it's a nice town. I'm really fond of that
place. Well, also in El Paso is the Border Patrol Museum. And is that how the line riders came about?
I wrote a bit about the Border Patrol in my first book, Cowboys and Gangsters. And while I was finishing that up, I thought that writing a book about prohibition on the border would be kind of an interesting topic. And so that book covers both the Border Patrol and then its counterparts in the Customs Service, the Mounted Customs Inspectors, during the Prohibition era. You know, when we think about Prohibition, a lot of Americans, you know, the popular memory of the Roaring Twenties and Prohibition is very much, you know, Chicago and New York and some more urban story. But a lot of it played out in this part of the country, too, with a lot of smuggling.
Well, it's like Canada and the Mexican border. There was a lot of stuff coming in.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and a lot of conflict and violence as a result, you know, both in El Paso and then along the Arizona-Sonora border as well, and all throughout Texas along the Rio Grande. And, you know, I wanted to write about that. A lot of people don't know about that history. It's sort of forgotten in a lot of respects.
Yeah, you wonder how many bodies floated down the Rio Grande.
Quite a few. I mean, certainly several hundred, you know, people were killed on
when the tide was up.
Yeah.
Well, you know, further down the line towards the Gulf, they'd say, well, there must have been a big weekend in El Paso. There's eight of them out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Cowboys and Gangsters, that was your first book. I made a mistake. I thought El Paso was. But regarding Cowboys and Gangsters, plenty of both in the Old West.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it kind of overlaps a little bit with the Border Patrol. But I was always fascinated by this idea that, you know, when people think of the history of the Wild West or the Old West, it's a chapter, you know, that kind of ends about 1900 for a lot of people, and that's not really true. I mean, it goes beyond that, and there were parts of the West, especially in the Southwest, that were pretty wild and lawless, you know, all the way up through the 1910s and the 1920s, and there was a lot of things going on that perpetuated that. You know, the Mexican Revolution, which spilled over the border quite often, and other events, the Prohibition also. And so there was a lot of shootouts and robberies and manhunts and things to write about that usually get overlooked. It's not the sort of classic era of the Old West as people sort of think about it.
Nobody writes about the oil conflicts.
Yeah, really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, one town that I always thought would be interesting to write about would be Borger, Texas. You know, Borger was a wild oil town. John Bosnecker writes quite a bit about it in his book on Frank Hamer. But, yeah, the oil towns in Texas were pretty wild.
Todd Roberts, jump in there.
Yeah, Todd.
So, Sam, you watch, you obviously grew up watching Westerns, television and film, and When did the light bulb go off in your head that, hey, I could go write about this stuff and it'd be interesting and make the villains worse and make the heroes a little more noble and so on? Where did that come from? What was the inspiration?
I think it started pretty young, Todd. When I was 8 years old, we came down here to Tucson. I grew up in Yavapai County in the Verde Valley. And my mother was quite sick. She was getting a cancer treatment here in Tucson in the late 80s. And we came down here in the summer of, I think it was 1988, and my dad took me out to Old Tucson Studios. And this is when Old Tucson was really Old Tucson.
Yeah.
It was before the 95 fire.
Before the amusement park.
Yeah, when you went to Old Tucson, I mean, it's a fun place, but it was really great back then because you could recognize a lot of the buildings and the sets. Everything was, you know, if you watch any of those movies, you know, Rio Bravo or Hombre or any of those films that were shot there, Joe Kidd, you recognized a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I liked Western movies already at that age, but I just was fascinated to go there and see where they shot El Dorado and all these movies that I liked. And so that was a sort of an indoctrination to the sort of pop culture Wild West, the cinematic Wild West. Well, the very next day, my father took me down to Tombstone. And I still remember that. I remember going to the courthouse and the OK Corral. That's back when the dummies, the mannequins they had in the OK Corral were pretty hokey. They're kind of charming in a way, but they're kind of hokey.
Straw people.
But it was real, and it made an impression on me that this was a real thing, you know. And so the two sides of that were kind of melded together. I love Western movies, old ones, new ones, everything in between. Mm-hmm. But I really love the history of the real West, the actual history. You know, the stuff that I write about. You know, my attitude about it is, you know, there are villains and there are good guys. I see a lot. I sort of see things in shades of gray a little bit, considering what I deal with. But I love writing about the stuff and researching it, you know, because it's so different from the way it's portrayed in movies.
What's your stance on the ERPs?
My stance on the ERPs, you know, I'm actually working on a book about Tombstone right now, and it's it's going to take a couple of years to finish, but. Yeah. I don't know if I'm making a mistake or doing the right thing. Time will tell. But I have the nerve to write a book about lawlessness in Tombstone that doesn't have to do with the ERPs. Tombstone is a big story.
Yeah.
Yes. And a lot goes on in Tombstone once the ERPs leave town in the spring of 1882.
Yep.
I mean, Wyatt Earp and his brothers, you know, Virgil Earp, I think I've always thought of as being more of a real lawman, I guess, than
more
the others. A more professional. He'd been constable in Prescott, and he'd worn badges in other places, and he was U.S. Marshal. He was the chief of police there in Tombstone, and or deputy U.S. Marshal, I should say, under Crawley Dake. But, you know, it's a really brief story, and, you know, and Wyatt Earp's career as a lawman, it is what it is. I'm not, like, anti-Earp. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that are into that topic, they're for the Earps, or they're for the Cowboys. I'm not for any of them. I'm really all about facts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wyatt Earp lived for, what, 81 years? And in those 81 years, I think he wore a badge as a peace officer for, like, 7 or 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I think of a guy like Jeff Milton, who worked in both Texas and in Arizona, and he was a peace officer for something like 40 years or longer.
A professional.
You know, so I guess that answers your question in a way. I don't see the ERPs as necessarily bad guys or good guys. They were opportunists, like a lot of people are.
Sure. Like everybody in the West at that time.
Yeah. Wyatt Earp was an itinerant lawman, like a lot of people were. I mean, it was not a job that paid very well, and it wasn't a career for a lot of people.
Right.
You know.
And you know,
he came here wanting to do other things.
And a footnote to that is he used his position as a lawman to get him very good tables to deal Pharaoh in the saloon.
Yes, he did.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, a friend of ours who has since passed was very much on the side of the Cowboys, and he always used to tell us his kin were there at the shootout, and he described what happened, you know, what his kinfolk told him, you know, and so that's how it was. And there was no changing Joe's mind about that.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
I've always, because Emil and Joe would battle back and forth, but I was of the persuasion that there's three groups there. You got the Earps, you got the Cowboys, which were outlaws, and then you had the real cowboys and real ranchers that they had nothing to do with that.
No, and didn't care.
They'd be smirched because they're a cowboy.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Hooker, you know, and all those guys.
Yeah, all right.
You know, it's an interesting, there's a lot of politics involved.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, the clash that goes on there is it's an interesting one because you had all these guys like John Slaughter and other people that had come up out of Texas, and they had come to southeastern Arizona. And a lot of the cowboys had worked for guys like John Slaughter.
Yep.
You know, and And then you had these newcomers, a lot of them that had been coming from the mining camps in California. And so we have a sort of Republican versus Democratic kind of clash that plays out. You know, law enforcement in the Old West was so political.
Of course.
Because it was part of a political spoil system, and there was no real job security.
So in your book about Tombstone, are you going to touch on the 10% ring?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to talk about all of that.
Oh,
Johnny
good.
Slaughter is going to be a big part of that story.
Don't forget the phantom finger of the Santa Fe ring with the Chisholms.
Yeah.
The Clintons.
When you finish off that book, make sure you let us know, because I have been trying to find stuff about the 10% ring, and it is like nothing. There's nothing, you know, except what I've picked up here and there.
There's so much interesting ground to cover, and so many interesting sheriffs in Cochise County between the 1880s and 1890s.
All right.
It was John Bronfield, sheriff of Cochise.
All right, we're going to finish or take our next commercial break here. On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, and Todd Roberts with you. Our guest, Sam Dolan, and we're talking Western books. We'll be right back.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ole Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
This Western stuff's all right. You guys saved my life.
We do it just to keep in practice. Look, you take the trail down that way. I'll lead the sheriff on a trip across country. Go on. I'll meet you later at Grayson Peak.
This is the Voices of the West.
Back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles, our guest Sam Dolan, author and film writer. And Sam, I play the theme there to, I'm sure you recognized it, the theme to the High Chaparral, because Mr. de France was in 52 or 3 or 4 episodes of High Chaparral when they filmed down here and all around southeast Arizona.
I
read up on that, and that I always liked watching that show. You know, it still plays, you know, at different times, and it was fun. And we were talking earlier about Old Tucson, and gosh, I just miss all those.
Oh yeah,
I miss all those sets that they had there back in the old days before the fire.
I maintain that High Chaparral was one of the most accurate of the TV westerns.
Probably.
For ranching.
Yeah.
It was a good one.
Probably.
Yeah, I liked that show.
Probably so. Let's talk about your filmmaking and what you do with that.
Your Emmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I as we were talking earlier, I got started, you know, working on westerns with my dad. My dad and I worked with Peter Schirico for a long time in the 90s and in the early 2000s, and then I started working, you know, for different production companies. I thought I would make a career out of it, and eventually went to Los Angeles and made my way up the ranks, so to speak, and became a producer, mostly working in cable documentaries. You know, I did the show Wild West Tech on History Channel with David Carradine. I was one of the associate producers on that.
That was a great program.
Thanks. Yeah, and a lot of, and we had a great team, and I was part of that team working with Laura Verklin and Lauren Herz and Brian Thompson and other producers that worked on that show, and did a lot of World War II documentaries and a lot of science things and a little bit of everything and some Western history shows. And what I do now is I work as a showrunner, an executive producer for a company called Warm Springs in Missoula, Montana. And we do shows for History and National Geographic, and we've done work for INSP and Discovery. And so I mostly work, kind of in the cable and streaming world.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's been a pretty good career. I got started on the back of a horse, and I guess I did okay in the long run. Yeah,
when you were 13, you appeared in Tombstone, and I read that Kurt Russell handed you his horse or the reins and told you, I forget what the line was, but how was that as a 13-year-old being exposed to that sort of thing?
Well, that was quite a day. I ended up working on that movie for about 10 or 12 weeks.
Wow.
It went over budget and over schedule. I think the original shoot was only supposed to be 10 or 12 weeks altogether, mm-hmm. and it ended up being something like 14 or 16 weeks. My dad got down there ahead of me, and then I got out of the seventh grade in the summer break, and so I went down there, and Peter Schirico got me hired on first as an extra, and then later as one of the buckaroos. So I was 13. I was the youngest guy to ride in the outlaw gang. I had a red sash. I carried a .45, rode my own horse.
Woo.
But my first day on set, we were shooting at the train station there in Old Tucson. And I got picked out to do this thing. And Kurt Russell, he's just gotten off the train. He's come, Wyatt Earp has come to Tucson. And the marshal comes up, and they're talking to him like, hey, you want to be a deputy? And Kurt says, no, I'm going to Tombstone. I'm here to, get rich or whatever. And while he's talking to the actor playing Crawley Dake, the U.S. Marshal, he turns to me, and he hands me the lead rope to his horse and hands me a silver dollar and says, easy on the grain, Butch. I have like a two-shot there with Kurt Russell. Yeah.
How cool.
And that was my first day in show business. And it was all uphill from there. But no, it was great. And this is a funny thing. There was a coin show here in
I'm sorry,
cursed. Go ahead.
I'm saying anybody that ever works on a film is cursed for life because they get the bug.
Oh yeah, no, that's true. And I was 13 years old and I loved Western movies, and here I am in Old Tucson, and I'm mm-hmm. Sam Elliott's here and Kurt Russell and all these guys, and
cool.
That was such a great adventure. Okay. I actually went looking for a silver dollar from the 1880s recently. I went to the Tucson coin show, and
uh-huh.
I was struck by how expensive they are.
Yeah.
I'm like, I want to have one of those.
right, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Rio Doce at the racetrack in the summertime when people would cash in their tickets. They got, instead of a dollar bill, they got a silver dollar
mm-hmm.
because I think the reasoning was that, they're going to spend it. And I was silver dollars everywhere. I had... God, why did I save them?
I know.
Well, I got an education last week in what a Morgan silver dollar from like 1881.
Oh, worked. Yeah. And, yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole area of collecting that I was ignorant of.
But, I have some Liberty. I don't think they're Morgans, but they're Liberty silver dollars. And
They're worth.
Well, they're worth more than a buck. I know that.
Yeah.
But
there certainly are.
I won't part with the collection because it's just too doggone cool. Todd Roberts, get in there.
Yeah, Todd.
So, Sam, how often after you've written your book or you're watching the news and you see what's going on in the news and you say to yourself, are they copying me or am I copying them? What all these similarities and conflicts and so on, do you ever kind of explore that?
Well, you mean the sort of the connections between, current events and the things that I write about? Is that what you mean, Todd?
Yeah, and that everything old is new again.
Yeah, I guess that's true. you know, when I've written about the border, you know, I always felt that there would be quite a bit of, you know, relevance to that, because there really is nothing new under the sun. I mean, I could say that about any of the things that I write about. You know, I've written and researched so many murders that there's nothing that surprises me now. You know, things then, things now. As far as current events are concerned, it's an interesting thing to ponder, because, you know, the events that I wrote about are so much different than they are now. You know, it's kind of hard to compare the old Border Patrol with the modern, you know, CBP, but you know, there is a history there and a lineage, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was certainly a different time in place, for sure. I mean, it probably the deadliest time to be a law enforcement officer in America was probably the 1920s at the height of Prohibition. I mean, it was just super dangerous. Mm-hmm. And a lot of officers got killed, whether they were, you know, local officers or customs inspectors or Border Patrol inspectors. So I do think about those things a lot. Some things change and some things never do. I was in El Paso one time, and I was out at Concordia Cemetery, which is a really cool place. That's where John Wesley Hardin is buried, and Selman and some of these guys. But I was there like on June 20th. And being in Concordia Cemetery on June 20th is like being on the surface of the sun.
Exactly.
You know, it's really hot and no one else is there. And this groundskeeper was out there. He was doing some maintenance. And he came up to me and he's like, why are you here? This is like, nobody comes here, you know, in June. And I said, well, I'm researching and taking pictures for a book. And I explained what I was doing. And I told him about all the stuff during Prohibition on the border and the Rio Grande. And he just sort of looked at me and looked off towards Juarez. And he shook his head and he says, nothing has changed.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned about the crime in Arizona, and or not in Arizona, but in the Southwest, and how it needed to get cleaned up. Arizona could not become a state until it cleaned itself up.
And New Mexico.
And New Mexico, the same thing. Otherwise, yeah, both would have been brought into the Union much earlier.
Today.
Yeah, they would or sold off someplace. Maybe sold to Mexico, who knows?
Yeah. Tell us about
that. Arizona had a lot going for it, you know, in the early years of the 20th century, when we were, as far as mineral production and agriculture and so many things.
Yeah.
It potentially one of the richest states in the Union in a lot of respects. Yep. Bisbee is a copper producer. It's a major town. Yeah. One of the biggest towns in the territory.
Yep.
But it was, you know, we had a low population density, and it was lots of it were still lawless. There was problems with violent crime, rustling, you know, livestock theft, smuggling, and all manner of things. Both Arizona and New Mexico had to create territorial police forces to contend with that, and that helped lead to statehood. It was a lot of other things too. Mm, that was certainly a part of it.
Tell us about the Navajo Cops project you worked on.
Hmm. About 2000 and end of 2009, beginning of 2010, I pitched a show to the folks that I work for at a production company in Los Angeles called Flight 33 about the Navajo Tribal Police, because I thought it would be an interesting idea. And we took it to National Geographic, and they ordered a pilot, and we shot a pilot, and then we did a season of episodes. And so over the course of about 2 years working on that project, I spent a lot of time up in Window Rock on the Navajo Reservation and the Navajo Nation, working with the police officers, riding with them and going out on calls. And it was fascinating. It was very dangerous work.
Mm-hmm.
But it was quite an experience. Met a lot of really fascinating people and a lot of great officers, some of whom have since retired. A few have passed away. Underscoring how dangerous it is. Some were later lost in the line of duty or injured in the line of duty. And it was quite an eye opening experience.
Yeah, you know,
I think the first call I went on. Yeah, I wasn't even in the show. I was out on a call one afternoon. It was the first one I went on, and it was a woman who was chasing her husband down the street in Fort Defiance with an axe.
Oh boy.
And that got my attention.
Yeah, for sure. Just like Tucson, where we have axe murderers.
That's that lesson. You know, when she says do the dishes, do the dishes.
Damn right. All right, we need to take our final commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you, and our guest Sam Doan, author and filmmaker. We'll be right back after these.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the hacienda. That's a five-bedroom, three-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms. But you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's
777-1911. Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats. But did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
These savages, and if you don't hear my first holler, you better read my mind, because I don't aim to raise no two hollers on any subject at hand.
Yes, sir.
This is the Voices of the West.
Jack a diamond, Jack a diamond, and I know you of old. You've robbed my poor pockets of silver and gold. It's a whiskey, you villain, you've been my downfall. You've kicked me, you've covered me, but I love you for all. And it's a whiskey rye whiskey, whiskey I cry. If I don't get rye whiskey, well, I think I will die.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, the great Tex Ritter. And,
that's one of my favorite songs.
I know, right? I dedicate that song to Todd Roberts and myself. Rye whiskey, yipper. And that sounds about like us at the bar.
Yeah, it does sound like you.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, and Todd Roberts. Sam Doan is our guest. And shameless promotion time, Sam. What's coming up next for you? The Tombstone book?
Yes, I'm working on a book about lawlessness and Tombstone after the Earps left town, and that's a work in progress. It'll probably be finished up about the end of next year, or the very beginning of 2028. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly prolific. I do have a day job, so I have to kind of work on these things as I go. And I also write articles for the Tombstone Epitaph mm-hmm. pretty regularly, mm-hmm. so that helps.
Good for you.
It helps with what little idle time I have. But I work steady in television, so that keeps me out of trouble. But the Tombstone book, I'll probably have that finished up in about 18 months or so.
All right. Todd, you got anything else?
So, Sam, I don't mean to be personal, but I look on your Facebook page and there's this several pictures of you and a little young fella. And I say to myself, well, who is that fella? Who is that fella, oh. Sam?
Well, that's probably my son, Jack. And
he's having a pretty good time with you.
He does. He has a good time with me. He's a good research buddy. And we hit the road together a lot. He's not so little now. He turned 16 a couple weeks ago,
goodness.
And he's almost taller than me. But we were just out at Fort Bowie last week and did the hike, and he likes to go to Bisbee and Tombstone and all those places. And
cool.
You know, loves hitting the road with Dad, and we go on little adventures together. And he likes hanging out here in my office because there's swords and guns and books and things to look at.
There you go.
Sounds like my
son. I'm trying to give him a taste of the finer things,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Sounds
like you need to take a train trip with Harry and I.
Yeah, for sure.
I guarantee you trouble on any and every end.
You know, the railroad puts out red flags all over the place. That's why Bunker won't go with us.
We knew we were in trouble when the bartender said, "We've got no more liquor."
We drank them dry. All right, and favorite Western is...
I know.
I do, too, but...
My favorite Western?
Yes, sir.
It's a good one. I would say that I've got... I still have a soft spot for The Searchers.
Yep.
Oh,
it's
Yeah.
You know, it's not a perfect movie by any means, and there's a lot that one could pick apart about it, but... Visually, I feel like every frame of that movie is like a painting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a heartwarming story. Wayne plays a very dark figure. It's one of his most interesting performances.
His greatest.
I just think it's a great movie.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of surprised, though. I thought you were going to say My Darling Clementine, which is on
tonight.
Well,
I like that one. It's a near second. There's a lot of things I like about My Darling Clementine. And there's a moment in there, other people cite this too, it's hilarious, but Henry Fonda asks the bartender, "Hey, have you ever been in love?" And the bartender says, "No, I've been a bartender all my life."
Yeah.
And there's a lot of great things in that movie. It's almost like a film noir. It's very interestingly photographed. It's a great Western.
I think it's the best Herb movie out there.
That film, especially the scene of Henry Fonda on the porch after he visits the barbershop.
Oh, yes.
That film, but also really much that scene, is Lee Marvin's favorite scene and favorite film. And he studied that endlessly prior to making Monty Walsh. So his Lee Marvin scene on the porch at Chet's wedding, that's all being inspired from Henry Fonda on the porch in My Darling Clementine.
Wow, that's cool.
Well, that's great. It's so funny you should mention Monty Walsh. I finally, just this week, for the first time in my entire life, started reading Jack Schaefer's novel.
Better than Shane.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's just so good. It's just great.
And it's so different, too. It's so cowboy.
I'm ashamed that it took me this long to get to it, but I'm reading it now. I'm really enjoying it.
Shame.
While they're playing tomorrow in Hollywood at the Egyptian, they're screening My Darling Clementine. So Noah,
are they really?
Noah and I are going to go, and we're just going to have a grand time. She's never seen it, and it's one of my favorites, and it was also one of my father's favorites.
I'm going to watch it.
You know,
tonight.
There's a scene. If there's time for me to mention this, there's a scene where they're doing surgery on Victor Mature's girlfriend,
and Leonard Arnell.
It's so fascinating. It's so dark and it's moody. And then there's all of this noise out in the street and the different saloons. It's just that moment in that movie is just so interesting. It's just great. There's so many little things in that movie that are wonderful.
Sam, we're plumb out of time. I want to thank you much for being with us this afternoon. And don't be a stranger.
Well, yeah, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. Yeah, I'm glad we got to do this. Thanks, guys.
We'll also invite you over to our coffee gathering on Friday mornings. Over, you got to go to the west side, so make sure the horse has plenty of grain, you know.
My side of town.
So
I
anyway,
think we can do that.
All right. All righty, Sam Dolan, thank you so much. That is it for this edition of Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.
78. 79. Adio, Sam Dolan, and all you criminal types that you hang out with and talk about and write about.
Alrighty, so long, folks. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West.